introduce our very own Karen Diana. Let's give her a welcome applause.
Thank you, Barb. It's really an honor to speak to you today on a topic that's really dear to my heart, and that is accessing our higher energy, our higher self, which Dick Schwartz calls the higher self, the inner knowing, which really connects with our belief in unity and what we think. So let me just see if I can go to the next slide. Click, maybe that way. Oh, okay. So for those of you that don't know me, I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner. I'll put my water down. I've been practicing for 16 years as a psychotherapist and a prescriber. I currently work at one of our inpatient hospitals. But for 10 years, I did individual counseling and trauma work with people. And I love this model. Dick created it and has developed the Institute for Internal Family Systems in the year 2000. He's a graduate of Northwestern University, a PhD psychologist, who began to work with very, very disturbed people, people that were gangbangers, that had eating disorders, things they could not overcome. And he said his patients taught him this model, that as they began to work with their judgmental parts, their critical parts, as they begin to peel away the layers, that inside every single person was the same essence, and that was the knowing, the connectedness, what we would call the higher mind. A core tenet, I think I spelled that word wrong, is that inside all of us, not only do we have a higher self, we have parts that were created to help us get through life, right? And there are no bad parts. If we went through traumatic incidents, maybe some parts of us took over to help us cope. And sometimes they can get extreme in our adult bodies. So the goal of this therapy is to help all parts work cohesively and together, so that a person can deal with whatever extreme feelings they may be experiencing. IFS, Internal Family Systems, sees people as being whole underneath this collection of parts, and that everyone has that center. Everyone has access to their own healing, which I love, which goes with our unity principles. And so they're up there that we're co-creators with God, creating our reality through thoughts held in the mind. And through prayer and meditation, we align our heart with God. However, sometimes we know that no matter how much we pray or meditate, there may be bothersome thoughts or feelings that we just can't seem to relax, that we try to push back, and sometimes we're not able to. So let's identify first the qualities of self. And let's say them out loud. I'm going to say one, and you guys repeat, okay? The first one is clarity. Courageousness. Curiosity, creativity, calm, compassionate, connectedness, and confidence. So Dick outlines the model first with the self. And he says, in each of us, we have managers or parts that are really just trying to help us in everyday life. And they're usually focused on everyday tasks. Sometimes they can get extreme. Does anybody have a workaholic part or a timekeeper part that's got to be on time? Right. Or a part that has to have the house a certain way. And if it's not, it's upsetting to us. There's usually reasons for that, right? So the idea is that learning how to have compassion for the parts we don't like. Can we get rid of a part we don't like? Doesn't work. It'll get very extreme, and it'll eat your lunch eventually, right? I don't like my worried part, okay? I was taught I had to be strong, step up to the plate, you know, pull myself up. And when I get worried, I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to get rid of this part. It doesn't work like that. What we have to do is get to know the part and find out where it came from. Why is it trying to help us? Because really, in all of its work, it's really just trying to do something good. It just doesn't understand that we're adults, okay? So the theory is that these parts have their own mindset, beliefs, and experiences, and they act from those experiences. So sometimes we have to give them updates, okay? Firefighters. What do you think a firefighter is? Yeah. So those are our attic parts, right? They come in when we need sudden dousing out of some emotion. It might be our eaters, our drinkers, our workaholics, our addiction to relationships. Anything that feels extreme, that needs extreme attention, that's where they step in. Yeah, what do you think about that? 95% of our behaviors are controlled by our subconscious. So what is the work about? Becoming conscious, right? So it means attending to the self. We call it making the U-turn. Anytime we feel an aversion or an attraction to something that feels extreme, it is a call for healing. It is a call to go inside and do our work. And of course, these parts don't really believe in a self because a lot of them never had parents, so they don't believe in God. They don't believe that there's anything there. They're acting out of desperation a lot of times. So we have to connect with these parts to get to know them, and some of us have never even done that. My husband, Neil Anderson, he's a therapist. He's in the audience and recording me, excuse me. We did the work and the training 2008 and 9, and so how do you learn it? You do it. And so that's how I first really got connected with a lot of the different parts of myself I never even knew existed. And that's just a quote from Rom. A feeling of aversion or attachment towards something is your clue that there's work to be done. Marianne Williamson, who knows her? New Thought teacher. I love it what she says about ego, which we'll call in the IFS model managers or protectors, fear-based. And ego says when everything falls in place, I'll feel peace. But spirit says, I find peace and everything will fall in place. Living life from the inside out. So how do we access our self-energy, our higher God? The first thing we have to do is get permission to go in, right? So the first thing we have to understand what's going on, any thought, feeling, or worry we're having, instead of denying it, pushing it back, we have to give it attention. Get a drink of water. So the first part is mindfulness, getting connected to your body, beginning to know what thoughts you're having, and writing about your parts. I left some worksheets on the back table. And it's just a little questionnaire you can go through if you want to take some quiet time for yourself. And just ask yourself, what part do I have that tries to protect me a lot? Okay. I've got one. Every single day when I go to work, I have to put my makeup on. I have to do my hair. This is a part that just thinks that this is how I look presentable and professional to people. I don't have to do it, but it's a part that's been around a long time. It used to be very extreme, and I had to be perfect and, you know, thin, and I had to be a certain way, you know, and through the years and the healing, I've become much more relaxed. I had a point in time where I wore no makeup, and now I'm sort of back to midline, right? So we go through different ways of managing our parts. And again, any extreme emotion or behavior that has taken over your interior, your emotional being, is a protector. Protectors don't know we're children anymore. They're essentially focused on our current life, but they're strongly influenced by relationships and experiences from childhood. So here's some a list of more protectors: our inner critics, our judgmental parts, our competitive parts, rebellious parts, worried parts, controlling parts that want to fix others, parts that say never again. Does anybody have a never again inside? I have one from the sixth grade, and I'm in a cheerleading suit, and Todd Tucker said, your legs look like watermelon thighs. And I said inside, from a sixth grader perspective, I will never again let that happen. So what do you think I did? Diet, yes. I went on a diet from the age of 14 on, and that's all I would do is think, okay, if I just get thin enough, I'll be acceptable. But all of us, as we come into this earth, are dealing with our own unworthiness, aren't we? And this is the way we flush out those myths. This is the way we bring it to light. We talk about it. We own it. And then we can heal it, right? perfectionists, we talk about that, withholders, people that don't want to talk, people that remove themselves from situations. They want power. They're afraid. They're frightened. So one way of having power, if a person is frightened, is to withhold or step back. We talked about firefighters. Now, exiles. What are exiles? Those are very wounded parts of us that stay very hidden and disconnected from the rest of our system because they don't want to overwhelm us. I've got a little slideshow, and if we have time during the offering, I made it, and it's really a collection of all my parts, and there are lots of parts of me as a little girl. She is my exile part. She was very wounded early on. So my work was about reconnecting with her, okay, and learning how to honor her, welcome her, make her feel safe. Okay? The body is the container for all our emotional experiences. If we've been traumatized, many times we will leave our body and go into our head. Okay? We'll just be from neck up, and that's it. So it is possible to work on yourself. I do have Jay's book in the back, Jay Early's book, Self-Therapy, that has some instruction on dialoguing that I mentioned. And again, the goal of the work is to have compassion for all our parts, not to get rid of the parts, but to learn how to update them, connect with each of them, and so they can connect with a new way of leadership inside. My mentor, Neil and I's mentor, Mark Weiss, he always explained it as, it's a bunch of kids that don't have a driver's license and they're trying to drive the bus and nobody knows the right way to do it. Okay, we're multidimensional, we're multiplistic. These parts exist inside of us even when we don't want to acknowledge them, but they will try to get our attention one way or the other. And there are several books out. One is The Body Keeps the Score. Bessel van der Kolk talks about trauma and the effects on the body. We know the science behind the connection between immune disorders and emotional illness, right? And physical, other problems, heart disease, depression, they all go together, and it's usually rooted in a traumatic experience. I always love Louise Hay, this idea that she, her book, Heal Your Body, Heal Your Mind, she had a negative belief that was connected to every physical symptom. And so she always gave you the positive affirmation to work with. And we might do these over and over, but if we still struggle with them, then it may be a call to go deeper, to try to do some dialoguing and work with these parts. The other thing that I love about IFS, it's not just, here, I'm going to teach you some coping skills. Go meditate, go do yoga, you know, we'll talk every week. It really is about doing inner healing, because once we help a part of us unburden a traumatic event or a loss, we can help them take in positive qualities that they needed that they didn't get. So for me, I do this work because my life really wasn't working when I was younger. I didn't know I had any trauma. I married, had two children, and everything went downhill fairly quickly. I started therapy at the age of 28, and what I found out is I'd never dealt with the sudden death of my father when I was 15. And that 15-year-old was running the show, let me tell you, and she was on top of it. She'd become an RN at 20. She was controlling the kids. She was taking care of the house, but she was falling apart. And to cope, I developed an eating disorder. I couldn't deal with my husband, who had a temper problem himself, but that's what we do. We will attract partners that fit like dovetails in our lives. I needed a protector, a guide, and boy, did I get one, right? So I love John. He transitioned about 3 years ago, and I always thank him because the pain that I experienced in that relationship has brought me to today, right? And we actually had a healing before he died, and I feel gratitude for him because our spiritual teachers are often the ones that cause us the most pain. Think about it. I remember, you know, I just have a flashback now. My part's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, he'd always say, you always tell lies. You always tell lies. And I did. I was so afraid of being judged and criticized. You know, if he said, did you take the baby out and it was snowing? Oh, no, I didn't take the baby out. I did take the baby out, but I didn't want to be punished. I didn't want to be berated. It's not like I did anything really wrong. And so I would get defensive as a young woman and say, I do not lie. And I thought, well, I really do lie when I got into therapy, right? But there was a reason. And so some of this is about healing and understanding why we did what we did, right? And understanding where we are today if we want to go forward. The idea that we can say, oh, that's behind me, it's in the past, it's not in the past. It's in your body and it's alive and well. And either you deal with it or it's going to deal with you. Bottom line. So in closing, again, there are no bad parts. The parts you don't like are only hurt parts that carry pain and shame. You can't cut out a part of your psyche. The way to transform the part of you that you don't like is to get to know it better, develop some compassion for it, find out why it does what it does, and see what it's been trying to help you with. And from there, you might be able to do some internal work to heal. Oh, sorry, going the wrong way. So this is the last picture I found of my dad. I love this picture because this is my 15-year-old that had dyed her hair in 1977. I had the halo look. I loved it. Farrah Fawcett all over again, right? And this is my mom and my nephew. And I love this part. I love this picture because now I can connect with my dad. And I can really appreciate all the things about him that have helped me through the years, right? I was really mad at my mom and God for a long time because I was like, God, why did you take away the leader of the family, right? And some of us don't like to even deal with our anger at what we think is God when it was really a random incident in life. And so I had a hard time dealing with my inner rage. Does anybody have problems dealing with anger? Yeah. So what do we do with them? What do we do with anger if we can't talk about it or express it? We eat over it, we stuff it, we ignore it, we exercise over it, we focus on other people, right? And sometimes, for a long time, if rage is repressed, it turns to what? Depression. Rage turned inward is depression. And so the myth is that you're supposed to be strong. The myth is don't trust other people. Being a grown-up means we start to lean on others. Means we start to take risk. We allow ourselves to look silly. What do you think the worst embarrassment and fear of most people are? What would you think the number one is? The number one fear people have is, yes, making a fool of themselves in front of people. I get those lessons all the time. Fall, I trip. I had brain surgery a couple years ago, and, you know, I still have a little problem with word finding sometimes. In fact, I was working with my parts this morning like, oh, God, what if I forget a word? I'm going to look like a fool, you know. And I was like, okay, I just will. It'll just be what it is. Self-acceptance, right? Self-acceptance is the key. It is the key. Loving ourselves. If we don't love ourselves, who is? Right? So I just notice. Just take a minute. Let's go inside. Just have your inner guide. Just connect with yourself and just notice, are there any parts of you that are triggered by these words today? Any parts of you that have questions, concerns, that don't believe it? Just accept all of those parts and know that we welcome them. There are no bad feelings, thoughts. And after the church service today, if you have questions, I can certainly meet with you to answer them. Great. Just take a deep breath and come back into the room. So I want to thank Dick for creating this psychodynamic theory, and Dr. Mark Weiss, my mentor, my husband's mentor, and Ursula Linty. She's a minister and an IFS therapist. We often do Skyping sessions together. And another thing I love about IFS, you don't have to be a mental health therapist to do the training. If you are in business, if you are a minister, if you work with people, you can do this work, because the more you do the work, guess what happens on the planet? We heal the planet because we're more present, right? So I love that idea. And there are also some slips in the back that give the website for IFS if you're looking for a therapist. I don't believe, except for my husband, Neil, who has a a commitment at comprehensive health care, which means that there's not going to be a lot of access to him if you wanted to see him, but you could possibly do some Skype work or go to Tri-Cities, where they have several private practitioners that do it as well. And Skyping is a great way. I Skype with my partner, and it's very real, and it's very helpful. Okay? Yeah, so let's have some time for questions. Any questions? Yes. Well, this is my thought about 12-step groups. They do look at substances as a disease and abstinence from it, sort of like you've got to stay away from it, don't do it. We look at it as, in IFS, as a coping skill. So that part of you that keeps reaching for things is doing so because that's all it has. Okay? So certainly it can work, yes, absolutely. It's a great way to have community. Okay, as long as the person doesn't get too caught up in the rigidity of the 12-step rules. That has been my experience in the past sometimes in Al-Anon and AA. People get very caught up in the rigidity of who's working their program and who's not. Okay, and some people, 12-step group just does not resonate with. But it certainly can be a helpful tool. Anybody else? Yes, absolutely. That is another call to work with a part. And so there is a little exercise sheet you might pick up at back there on the table to get to know the part better. Because that just means there's something to work with, right? Something keeps happening. And we're never done, are we? Right? Like Neil and I laugh because we've worked so hard to be conscious since we started this journey together that me being goofy and silly and falling off the stairs and not being shamed to death about it is true progress, right? I mean, we worked hard to do that. We're conscious. We're trying to be conscious about it. It's about accepting our imperfections and loving all the parts of us because they all have gifts. This morning, my stupid laptop would not print out my talk. I was having a hissy fit. And Neil is trying to help me, and he's going, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. I said, don't tell me it's okay. I can't get it printed out. And he goes, okay, I'm upset too. I'm like, okay, see. So he talked for his part. I talked for my part. I got in the car. I drove here. And, you know, spirit works in mysterious ways. We have a new puppy who we just adore. And out of the blue, on the way to church, Lori from Canine Country Club calls me to talk about getting my little Greta into doggy daycare. And suddenly, I was at peace. Because I was focused on her. I drove into the parking lot. I was like, thank you, God. I just needed that. You know, I do believe things happen like that for us if we just allow it. So thank you so much. My take on things is I'm not perfect. I'm another person just like you. I don't want to be looked at as up here and someone else down here. And in IFS therapy, that is, it's a one-to-one situation. It's the therapist to the patient, and we ask the patient to go inside or the client to go inside to work. We're not trying to be super therapists. We just sort of hold the candle. Okay? So thank you. Namaste, and hope you have a wonderful day.